You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
All right, welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I am Zeke Nicholson. I was the guest on a previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing La Ronde-style podcasting. Today, my guest is the very funny Jaquice Neal, who improv fans might know from his UCB Herald team, Dollhouse. New Herald team.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks, brother. What's up?
What's up, man? Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, man.
Before I forget to, like, check out his podcast, Culture Kings podcast.
Yes, sir.
With some other UCB faves, Carl Tart and Edgar Monplaisir. And that is on
the How Stuff Works Network.
How Stuff Works Network. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Cool. So, Dollhouse, you've been on a Herald team now for 2 months?
This? About 2.5 months.
Yeah. How's it going?
It's great, man.
Yeah.
It's a super fun team. It's a team full of all new people to Herald Night.
Yeah.
Which is really fun.
For sure.
Yeah, man. We're having a blast. You know, we're going through those learning how to be a team.
Totally.
And working on specific stuff. And once you feel the returns of that, it feels great. But then you'll be like, all right, that was great. Now work on this.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. So it's been a super fun process.
Yeah.
Because I've been on two mess hall teams. So I've been like on this Herald type team, but not on Herald Night.
For sure.
But this is and has been just a different beast as far as performing more and actually seeing the returns come back pretty quickly. So it's been pretty cool.
That's great. You seem like you're not stressed out by it. Is
no.
that correct? That's
yeah.
good. Yeah.
No, not at all.
I remember talking to some people that like, I did a lot of boot camp, improv boot camp with Susie Barrett and Eugene Cordero and Drew DeFonso Marks. And that, when I was doing that, there was like a generation of people that like got on Herald the year before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so stressed out almost immediately. Just
Why?
Like, I think, yeah, I don't know. It's just not easy for everyone.
Yeah.
And it can be really challenging, I think, especially if you're sort of, I don't know if it's like you get on a little early or
yeah.
like you don't quite, you're not 100% confident in sort of like who your voice is as a comedian. I think it can be a kind of tricky thing. But I remember not ever feeling stressed out. Like our Redbird certainly went through many hard times where we were trying to figure stuff out. And like
right.
that first year is just like you're so inconsistent.
You
and
are.
Like that's just like the beast that you have to battle with.
Yeah.
But it's like slowly raising that ratio. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that it's been fun. Who's
it's
your
been fun? Dan Lifford is our coach.
Your coach got it.
Yeah, it's been super
very
fun.
Very bad
man.
At improv and not
oh,
a nice guy. So.
He's one of the worst humans I've ever seen. No, he's
yeah.
a great dude. He's awesome. He's super chill. He's perfect for our
dope.
Team. So,
had you played with anybody on your team prior to getting on?
Yeah, so me and James Mannion mm-hmm. were on TKO together.
Cool.
So,
that was your
team.
Mess hall team?
Yeah. He's a super funny dude.
Very
so
funny.
That was pretty cool. And then me, James, and Vic were probably like, it ended a month before auditions. We're in a class together.
Oh, great.
So that was also cool. Like,
she's
I didn't know
hilarious.
Vic well, but
she's
super funny.
Really fucking hard.
Super smart. She's skyrocketing.
She's that player that you need. You're like, no matter what Herald team you put her on, she will be fucking fine, and
yeah.
the team will be like, she's just this solid. I had never really seen her prior
yeah.
to, like, maybe she's on Fashion Show at Lunch, and I feel like White Women did a show or two with them, but I had never really seen her. And then at auditions, I was like, oh my god,
yeah,
she's
dude,
really good.
Yeah, she's super fun, man.
Yeah, that's great. Ashley Holston also is.
Yeah,
know,
dude, Ashley Holston.
I don't want to say I taught her everything she knows.
I mean,
Ashley, but
you know, you can say it.
I worked with her for a good long time, and
you
let me tell you, she was a baby when I met her.
Yeah,
and she's a full grown improviser.
Now she's walking.
And now she's walking.
She's driving that Maserati.
That's great. So you're from Chicago.
Yeah.
Did you do improv there?
Surprisingly, no. All right, so I went to Columbia College, and the
Columbia in Chicago.
In Chicago, So the artistic director of the theater program was one of the founders, per se. He's not recognized as, like, the founder, but he was one of the guys that was there when Second City was founded, Sheldon Patinkin. So improv and comedy was important to him. This dude has worked with legends. So he had improv in his program, so I took, like, a couple classes, did a couple shows at Second City. And then after I graduated in 08, when it came time, like, oh, man, this is fun. I love it. Maybe I'll go take a class.
Yeah.
I got cast in my first professional theater play. And I was like, make money or spend money.
Sure.
Two fingers. Went on to actually go do theater professionally, full time.
Got it. So you're like a real actor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was a real, oh man, a real actor. Love it. but then when I came out here, it's funny, man.
Nobody gives a shit about theater out here.
Nobody gives a shit about theater out here. Yeah. And that's kind of the reason why I kind of jumped into improv. It wasn't like I could have did it in Chicago or I'm from Chicago. It was more like I missed that type of community.
For sure.
So I mostly started taking classes just as a way to meet people.
Yeah.
And just kind of kept snowballing from there. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I still have a friend from my 101 class 6 years ago.
That's awesome.
The only one that I still see regularly. But
I know anybody from...
Who was your 101 teacher?
Drew DeFonso Marks.
Sure.
Perfect. He was great. I don't know a single soul still from my 101 class. And if I do, and you're listening to this, I apologize. Because I don't remember.
You did not make enough of a lasting impression.
Yeah, you didn't. 201, a couple people, and then the main indie team I'm with, which is Some Kind of Monster.
Uh-huh.
Half of that team are people I met in 301. So 301 is the one where...
That was where it came together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How long has that team been around?
We formed in June of... What year is this? 2017? So June of 2015.
Okay.
So almost 2 years, we've been running our show Dramedy, for which you've done before, I think. Yeah. With white women, since May of last year.
Cool.
So yeah, we've been doing it for a little bit together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your approach to improv.
Yeah.
Would you say that you have that's sort of a general question, but like what, we're starting a scene. Where do you typically start from? Like would you consider yourself a sort of like right brain player, more of a left brain technical player? Mm-hmm. Like what's your forte?
I purposefully try to be both, I feel like, which I know probably doesn't answer the question, but I feel like with my comfort zone when I jump into a scene, is to listen first, kind of hear what the person is giving me. And then, try to add a little bit of relationship there so it can add some history and some weight and some actual stakes.
Yeah.
That's very important to me, at least, in the improv scene. And then from there, just kind of navigate through silliness.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit more of the let's play as far as let's get technical.
Sure.
Aspect, but... I feel like up top, like I have to, because if I don't listen, then I get stuck trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And when I'm trying to be funny, then I'm never around.
Totally.
Which I feel like is the case for not everybody. Some people are just funny.
Yeah.
And can be funny. But even those people who are funny, I feel get a little bit of a, not a bad rep, but they don't get as much credit as they deserve for actually still knowing how to navigate a scene.
Yeah.
Because being funny can only kind of get you so far.
That's true, yeah. And I think it's a coming challenge for people who are known for just being so hilarious kind of in their own essence that sometimes when they are doing the sort of quote-unquote proper technique, like, that was a big thing for Carl. Like,
yeah.
Just being like, people don't see what I'm doing. Right. I love Carl to death.
Yeah,
and
me too.
He worked really hard and has gotten really strong at being a sort of like more technical game-based player where that was like not what his sensibility was early on.
Yeah.
But I think it felt like the the curve lagged behind a little bit because people knew him as this like big,
this big funny
hilarious
character.
Like, and so sometimes people weren't seeing that he was sort of doing the technique stuff underneath. I think that's caught up now, and he's fucking fine.
He's great. Well, he's doing just fine. And if he tells you he's not,
he definitely
listen,
will tell
which
you
he will.
He's not.
Don't listen to him. As he is. But you know what? To kind of answer that in a better way, I think what I've figured out what works for me and how I try to approach a scene from the beginning, whether I'm initiating or whether I am coming out and supporting, is what do I find funny?
Mm-hmm.
What do I find funny, especially if it's premise-based, because, you know, I'm doing Heralds right now, so, and some kind of monster does a Law and Order form. So I've been doing premise-based improv mostly for the past 2 years. So what do I find funny? If I initiate and try to initiate from that standpoint and then let it go from there,
mm-hmm.
or if I'm receiving the initiation, what do I think you found funny about what you're pulling from?
Yeah.
If it's clear, then we can hit the ground running. If it's not, then I need to listen until I get it.
Totally.
So I try to approach scenes with that in mind, and then we can blow it out and be silly and do all that stuff. Yeah.
Is there a thing being on Herald Night where you're like, oh, this is an area of my improv game that I like really need to work on, mm-hmm. That like wasn't sort of readily obvious to you prior to getting onto that stage? Because like I know for me it's sort of twofold thing of like I didn't realize how weak of a straight man I was, mm-hmm. until there were some fucking heavy hitters like really challenging, mm-hmm. you know, and also was bad at just, I mean, game in general was a thing that it takes a long time to develop, and I honestly think the only way to learn it to master it is by being on Herald Night, unfortunately, because mm-hmm. it's like you have to sort of know it well enough to be chosen to be on a Herald team, but the only way to really learn it is by being on a Herald
team. Which is very true.
Yeah. That's why Mess Hall is great, though.
That's why Mess Hall is great, and Mess Hall was great for me.
Like, what's the thing you're like, all right, probably, this month I'm working on?
Yeah, I've been doing that for a while. Like, I approach practices, and so I'll get to this in a roundabout way. I approach practices with the idea that if I have a bad practice, it's good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're supposed to be in your head in practice. You're supposed to be trying stuff, taking risks. You're supposed to be failing.
Yeah.
Because that's when you work on those stuff and you're trying to see what works. So by the time I get on stage, is the whole, like, don't think shit.
Right.
I don't know. Can you curse on this? I don't know. The whole don't think shit. So, so I try to approach it from there. But one thing that I found that I do need to work on is initiating with a stronger premise.
Mm, for sure.
Or once I initiate with a strong premise, just sticking to probably initiating, because I've done a couple things and Dan has given me this note. I see what you were doing, but you changed two specifics.
Yeah.
Like, just change one.
Right.
Or you initiated with this thing and it was super funny, but then you kind of over-justified it.
Totally.
And you kind of started playing a different thing than what you initiated.
Yeah.
And what you initiated was the most simple version.
Right.
So that is probably the thing. And it's funny because what I've noticed is the shows where I felt I've had a better set are the shows where I have initiated.
Mm.
So what's happening is I'm not initiating as much as I would love to.
Yeah.
Because like now I'm in my head about, all right, what,
gotta do it right. Yeah.
I gotta do it. Like, I gotta pull this premise, or what's the easiest way? So initiating, and then the second part of that is just the, you're fine.
Yeah.
Which probably isn't an answer, but you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, whenever I'm not thinking like, oh, I got to do it right, I have the best shows that
totally.
I could possibly have.
Yeah.
So just bringing that consistency of knowing that I'm okay, we're funny, this is going to be a good show, and if it's not, okay.
Every show your first year on Herald Night is like the most precious fucking thing ever, and like that is just, it's so tough, because you're like, it's, you just overthink everything, and there's no way not to do it. Like, it's the team is just sort of learning to feel for each other. You're mm-hmm. learning what it's like to make moves on that stage, what things work, what don't. I remember really specifically, like, I would just get in my head about like ending up in the utility slots. I'm like, oh, I'm not in a beat like not like pre-planning, but like I was in a beat last week. Maybe I shouldn't be in a beat this week.
Right.
Like shit like this where you're just like the math of it all is so important. And the longer you're together, you're just like, fuck, I've done every possible permutation I've seen at this point. There's no, it doesn't
right.
matter.
You it know? Doesn't. Yeah.
But it was also because like I didn't, that's another thing that I felt like I wasn't great at. I wasn't good. If I wasn't in one of the beats and feeling like I had kind of put my fingertips on the
on
show,
the show,
you know,
right.
Is that something that you feel?
For this team, not so much because, it's a super supportive team. So
there are some players that just do that too.
Yeah.
They're like, they get on Herald Knight out of like being in an audition in the eighth slot, you know, like
yeah.
they just are amazing at support and group games and shit like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And this team kind of has that feel where, if we have bad first beats, which we haven't really to this point, we're all getting in there on a second beat.
Yeah.
And we're initiating each other's scenes already. And, you know, the group games have been fun. And,
that's great.
Like, you know, supportive and everybody's in there. So I really haven't had to feel like, oh, man, I don't feel like I did anything
yeah.
in that show, thankfully, because on Mess Hall, like, I had that a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe the more of that is just my own, like, it doesn't matter if you had your fingerprints on the show or not. Like what matters is if the show was good
totally.
And the team had a good show. So I've kind of gotten past that.
For
I
sure.
feel.
That's such a big thing for so many people to get over is like figuring out the idea of like, oh, yeah, just that line between I didn't play well, but the team had a good show, or I did play well, but the team didn't have a good show.
Right.
And like just sort of learning to have your individual quote unquote success in a set be completely secondary to
yeah.
the team's success. Yeah, that's such a real, it's just a hard thing to learn. And I think the only way you get it is just by doing it.
It's just by doing it a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that yeah, you know, I do always feel like all of us have our hands on the show.
Yeah,
a lot.
That's
great, which is pretty great.
Let me ask you a question. As a when did you started taking classes? What year?
2015.
15. Okay.
Wait. 2014.
14.
So 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great. So what was it like? When you let's get into some racial
let's
shit
get into
here,
some
man.
Racial shit.
Like, what was the scene like? We Will and I touched on this a little bit in the last episode, but like when you were a student, like what was the demographics of the people that you were seeing on stage in Herald Nights,
yeah.
and also in the indie scene?
Ronnie, and you,
yeah. So
and that's kind of all I can remember as far as, because this was even before Carl, because Carl was in Amsterdam doing Boom.
Right. So that first year it was, the people of color were myself, Ronnie.
On Herald Night at least. And probably there were more, but that's all I can visually remember.
That's all there were.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And then in the indie scene, none like that I can actively remember playing a lot, because this is even before, like... It's so funny, like 2004 isn't that long ago. It's not as long as you've been doing it. But as far as the whole the diversity boom in improv,
yeah,
like that was a little bit before that.
Totally.
Like there's no Arcane Currency. There's no Obama's Other Daughters.
Mm-hmm.
White women, you guys weren't, you were probably in a little bit of a hiatus because Carl was gone at that point. I'm not sure. But
we were very active without him.
Okay. You. Well, I didn't see y'all. No. But you guys were mostly doing a lot of sketch.
That we did have a year where we were doing a lot
right.
of
right, and
yeah.
so like as far as improv goes, like I wasn't seeing you guys play. You know, I wasn't seeing many black teams
yeah.
or that many black performers. So for me, and you know, I grew up in theater, so I've been growing up around white people for a very long time, and I've always been like the one black guy.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was very conscious. With that, where it's like, all right, don't play too black.
Yeah.
Whatever that means,
right.
which doesn't mean anything now to me. But, you know, don't, you have to fit in to what you see.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Were you on teams with other people of color? Or were
no.
You,
no.
No. So is this your first team with...
Ashley is the first... Dollhouse with Ashley is the first team I've ever been on with a performing team where it was I have another person of color.
Amazing.
On my team.
That's awesome.
I mean, one of my first indie teams, I had an Asian girl. So, I mean, the cell, I should say. So I should say another black person.
Sure.
Or another person of color who has kind of had the same experiences
totally.
That I have.
Yeah.
In life.
Do you find that, like, this is... sample size might be too small at this point to really know, but like, do you feel like you and Ashley have is there a different type of scene that you guys have access to that you feel like you haven't had? I mean, that's a personality thing too. It doesn't have to be exclusively racial, but like, I know for me, like with white women, it's just, the scenes are different in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. And obviously you guys are within it's you're just two people in a team that is not specifically kind of one monolithic thing the way
we're
that
white
women
is. We're two black people in a team full of white people.
Right.
Yeah.
But like even that is, it's so funny. It's like that was not a reality on Harold Knight even 30 years ago.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like pretty much like last year was kind of when it started to, I mean the year before that, the last year of Mike's tenure, it was starting to turn. Then last year, you really started to get more teams like, oh, there's two black people on this team now.
Yeah.
And now you got teams like Leroy, where you got four people of color on a team, which
That's
is
crazy.
Crazy. That's so, it's fantastic.
The year 2014, end of 13, early 14, it was like Nicole Byer and Marshall got cut, and they put me and Ronnie on, and then it was Renee, who's a Filipino dude, and Echo, and that was it.
That's it.
Across 48 That's people, crazy. Six teams. And now there's at least one person of color of every single team. I think everyone has two people.
I think all have two.
I think they all have two. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
I think they all have two, which is fantastic. So with me and Ashley, not quite yet.
Yeah.
I was telling this story on my podcast, and we had Ego, Woldem on. And it was like my third Harold Knight. And I went out and told a story about like being ashy and how, you know, you white folks need to keep lotion in your bathrooms for when we wash our hands. And felt uncomfortable.
Based on audience reaction?
Based on just like the audience reaction. And then I stepped back and I was like, oh, maybe this isn't the right place for it.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, I was talking to Ego, and she was like, no, fuck that. It is the right place for it. And it clicked back in my head. And so now, like, I have a whole new freedom where, I mean, I just did a show a couple days ago where a few times sprinkled through the show, like, I had a little bit of a running bit, and that's how white people ruin things. Like, I have that freedom to do it and be myself.
Totally.
A freedom that I was trying to kind of exclude before. Because it's not being black. Like, the approach I take to the quote-unquote what some people say, oh, you're doing black improv, is there's no such thing.
Yeah.
I am black. So when I'm doing this, I'm just bringing my experiences in.
Yeah.
And reacting honestly based on the things that I know and that I experience and that the honesty that I have in myself. And that is where the quote-unquote black experience comes in with improv. It's just being yourself.
Yeah.
Which is what I feel like teams like White Women do so well, is you guys just be yourselves.
Yeah.
And it has a different energy because you guys have had different experiences, but experiences that you don't get to see often in this scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Alyssa.
I'm May.
And we have a podcast called Crazy in Bed.
Crazy semicolon in bed.
Yeah, this isn't a sex podcast. We mean like we're crazy and we spend a lot of time in bed.
A lot.
Yes, we have new episodes coming out every Monday on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please.
Please, please listen.
We need this. This is all we have. We are fragile.
We're fragile and we could relapse.
Hang by thread, I'd say, but there's no thread, really.
No,
threads are too strong.
Hey, improv fans. If the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
So with that ashy thing, did that get used in this in the show at all?
No.
No, interesting.
Did it? It got used in the show, but in a different way.
Okay.
Not in the way of, y'all need lotion, so I won't be ashy.
Mm-hmm.
It got used in a way of, like, we need lotion to solve our problems type thing.
Got it.
Which, I mean, it was an okay scene.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It didn't get used in the way I set it up.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing where it's like there, I think the audience has come a long way in terms of like what type of scenes and what type of comedy they want. I think like white women have certainly felt a shift in that. Mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, sometimes you'll hit a thing where they're just like, they get uncomfortable when you remind them that they're white. Sometimes.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Sometimes they laugh really hard when you remind them that they're white. And then sometimes they're just like, nope, not today.
Nope, not today. Yeah, it's like, not today. Not feeling this today.
Yeah.
This white pride is ringing a little too high today.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Which is, you know, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. But I try to approach it in a way where I don't let that affect me.
Yeah.
And it's starting not to. On a much greater basis.
For sure. And it's also the kind of thing where it's like the longer you guys are a team, the more bulletproof you become to any reaction the audience has given you. Mm-hmm. Your team like will know like, oh, like let's double down on that idea that the audience sort of felt weird about. Like it's, you know, so much is just, being together for a length of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you coach at all?
A little bit. I'm starting to get into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
I coached a little bit over the past year, just like two or three teams.
Cool. What's your approach as a coach? Like where, if it's, Will asked me this question, I thought it was useful. Like if it's day one with a new team, like what types of exercises are we starting with?
First thing is you just want to kind of see how they play and get them comfortable with you.
Yeah.
Per se. And then myself being a relatively new coach, it is also a learning curve.
Totally.
For me as well. So one of the first things, like with one of the previous teams I coached, we just did scene work and worked on basics. I feel like unless they say we want to work on something specific,
yeah,
like let's work on just the things that makes a scene easier.
Sure.
Not make a scene funnier, not make a scene better, but just make a scene easier.
So that's what, environment, point of view.
Exactly. Justification. Don't forget the basics, who, what, where, stuff like that. These are things that makes the scene easier before you start to branch out and do a little bit more. I'm not a fan of warm-ups in general.
Interesting. I'm the opposite. I really need them.
You do?
Or not really need them, but I think they're really important.
You do?
That's funny.
See, I'm not a fan of them.
Yeah.
They don't do anything for me.
Mm.
They do for, I mean, it's like for me, they're like team building.
Yeah.
Things, which that's a good thing. That means something. But as far as like my improv, the one that I love the most is categories.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that kind of puts me in a, because you're listening, you're responding, you're waiting, you're taking, you're trying to get the correct path and make it as simple but as specific as possible.
Yeah.
So that is one that helps me. So like with warm-ups, I do struggle with warm-ups with groups because... Mm-hmm. And maybe this is just me. I need to start seeing more benefit in them.
For me, here's what it is. Like the reason that I like it, and I think I am on the other end of the spectrum in terms of like I really think they're extremely valuable is like for me it's a routine thing. And I think this comes from my days as an athlete. Like I was a track athlete in college, and it was like we would do the same warm-up every single day. Mm-hmm. And it was like getting into that headspace of I'm here to compete. I'm here to like keep things as routine as possible. And that's how you succeed consistently. And so for me, I'm like, I need, let me get there 30 minutes early. Let me connect with my team. Let's do freestyle rap. And so I try and do that every week. And both with White Women and Redbird, we'll go through periods where it's like, we'll lag a little bit. And like people start showing up later and later and later. And then the warm-ups get crunched or not at all. And then I'm like, hey, motherfuckers, can we get here
on time and do this? Yeah.
But the funny thing is like, I think I can, and I don't have hard math to back this up, but I think back on like the in the last year or whatever, like the quote unquote, the least successful both White Women and Redbird shows have been ones where we did not take the time to connect with each other before and like warm
up.
Yeah.
I agree with that. 100%. Routine, like I do the same thing. I make sure I'm there a little bit before time.
Yeah.
I take time to myself and stuff like that. So 100% with the routine thing. And I do think that is a benefit.
Yeah.
Is the connection to get your team on the same page.
Yeah.
So like with coaching, for instance, if I see a team is lacking energy, I don't think the warm up will make them in the mindset to do improv well, possibly. But it could get them on the same page to loosen them up
totally.
And, as a team.
Yeah.
So like that's one barrier that they don't have.
Yeah.
So I guess it is beneficial.
No, I mean, but, I get it. There's a whole none of the weekend teams ever would ever warm up in a gajillion years.
Yeah.
Like you hit a point where you're like, I've done them all. I don't need to do this shit anymore.
Yeah. There are warm ups that are beneficial. But this idea of, like, for indie shows, I hate warming up for indie shows.
Oh, I never warm up for an indie show.
I think it's, for Harold Knight, Mess Hall, yes, I get it. We have to warm up. You have to, because you have to connect with a team and you're about to go perform for a hot audience.
Yeah.
For indie show, I don't need to warm up and then go sit for 40 minutes. And it was pointless.
Yeah,
like,
that's
fair. It was just embarrassing to be out on the street at the clubhouse.
Hey,
Fred Hampton, what? Can we go sit the fuck down?
Yeah,
this is not doing anything for me. But yeah, so in that aspect.
I think the best warm up across the board is freestyle rapping.
Yeah.
It does, like, both my teams have been doing it now just for a couple years straight. And it's like, it is the most, it hits both levels of like, this is me like really working to sort of like use my brain actively and like, but it's also really fun. It's really connective and it's energetic too. And so it's like it, and I just try to make two, and a lot of them don't like to wrap it off. Like, listen, fuckers, it's good for you.
It.
Like, it makes you better. I don't know what to tell you.
That's awesome. Is it like not freestyle, like doing like Beastie Boys, like just straight up, like
straight
just
up,
get a cypher in and let's freestyle.
Yeah.
Love it.
Redbird will just sort of like bullshit around for a little bit and then come up with some stupid hook. It would be like, me and Jack Keese sitting doing podcasts, me and Jack. And then we would just like do like, yeah, and then do everybody does a verse off of that and then go back to the same dumb hook.
That's awesome.
White Woman has the same hook every single time. Well, we have a couple of them. We have Praise Him, which is very strange. It's like this weird like pseudo-religious.
Yeah.
And then we have another one called I Beat Your Ass, where we just like stomp and clap and go, I beat your ass.
That's
and
awesome.
Then just freestyle.
I would love to see that.
But it's great.
Yeah. I would say my favorite when I coach teams. My favorite warm-up to do is a version of categories where it's three rounds only. The first round, you point to someone and you say their name.
Oh, I love this. Yeah.
The second round, you point to someone and you say your name.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third round, you point to someone and you say somebody else's name, not the person you pointed to or yourself.
Yes.
It is so goddamn heady, and it matters because what it takes away is it takes away you just listening for the word.
Yeah.
And it puts you in a mindset of, I actually need to make sure I'm connecting with the person who I'm throwing this at before I receive it and before I move on.
And you're identifying pattern at a level that is above content, which is
yes.
really important. Like, you're not, yeah, the words have no meaning ultimately because
they have no meaning.
Yeah.
Because it's just names.
Yeah. A good, harder addendum to that is make everyone close their eyes too. Because then you take away the visual additive of, yeah. And that might not actually work with, that probably wouldn't, maybe. It would be really fucking hard with the name one. But just even regular categories, eyes closed, or have you done the one where you do like the cereals or whatever,
yes.
and then the third one is, the pattern is like, I'm going to take your spot in the circle.
Oh, I have done that, not as much, but I've done that
before. That one's
before.
A good one. Creating the movement, like, it just adds a whole nother layer of like, I really have to focus on, I like that one a lot.
Yeah, that's my favorite one to do when I coach a team.
Yeah, that's great. It's good. Cheap Trick too for learning fucking names of people that you're coaching.
Oh, that's the first category I do.
Yes, sir.
Because it helps me with learning their names, boy. And it helps them.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go as an improviser? Like what would be your dream? Where do you see yourself at UCB in however many years? Or like what are some
Yeah.
Not even necessarily improv. Like, are there other shows that you have interest in sort of putting on or taking part in?
I would, as far as improv goes, I would love for Dollhouse to become, you know, the next Winslow or Carl, where we're a team from the beginning and all the way to the graduation. Yeah. That would be fantastic, but, you know, focus on the next show.
Yeah.
Focus forward. Focus on the next game. But that is a goal that I can see already.
If you don't have that goal, something's wrong.
Like that's true.
You got to play. No, I think it's great, but not everyone does. They're like, I'll do it for a year. Like, no, you got to play. Like, this is the only fucking team you're ever gonna have.
Yeah, and you should want it to be, unless you guys don't like each other.
Right.
But we do, so we're good. Individually, feel free to bleep this out. I want to get to the point where I saw Colton Dunn do a show, him and Phil Jackson, and like they introduced him and he came on stage, and before he got the introduction, and this wasn't a show with like just a black show, he was like, "What's up, niggas?" And I was like, to have that comfortability. To know you could just say that and still go out and kill a show.
Dude.
Like, I would love to get there because I felt bad just even saying it. I do a podcast where we drop the word all the time, and I felt bad even saying it here. Like, to have that confidence on stage would be amazing.
I have a follow-up story about Colton Dunn and the N-word, which is that white women had a sketch that we were doing for a while where we were like civil rights workers or leaders from the future, and we existed in a world in which racism no longer existed, and so we came back in time to encourage the audience to be racist so that we would have something to do in the future. And so the bit ends basically with white women doing like a call and response and trapping the audience into yelling the N-word at us. And it was great. The sketch went great. And we were doing it as part of a showcase that Colton was also at. And he came out and was like doing some weird bit with like a helicopter, and it wasn't going well. And in the middle of it, he just abandoned it and just forced the audience to say the N-word 50 times in a row. And they loved every fucking second.
Yeah.
It was so funny. And you're right. It's like the dude is so, his bones are so fucking funny that he just is like, nigga, you say it. Say it right now.
Yeah.
And the audience just loved it. It was, he sort of ruined our sketch. Because he just did it, but better and funnier and improvised it. But oh God, it was so funny.
Yeah.
He is one of my favorite improvisers of all time. Yeah,
he's great. So that would be an individual goal.
That's great.
And I would love to do a one man show.
Sure. Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dope. So what else do you do besides improv stuff?
I'm an actor.
Cool.
I would love to, like, you know, TV, film, commercials. That's obviously the goal. Being out here, I do miss doing theater.
Yeah.
I've been doing a run of a show at UCB for almost a year now, sketch musical, called Whoa Man, and that's been a nice little outlet.
Yeah.
And it's kind of made me want to produce a show.
Sure.
I want to put on a production of Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, cool.
So that's a goal just outside of the comedy world.
Yeah, that's really fun.
I want to do.
I think there's not, theater is, I've been thinking about that too. I went and saw, do you know Eva Anderson?
Yeah, I know the name. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's writes on a lot of things, but she was on, Kiss from Daddy. Yes. Kiss from Daddy, which was a sketch team back in the day. They were one of the early mod teams, that got graduated back in like Birthday Boys era.
Mm-hmm.
And she just did this really amazing, sort of immersive theater thing that Michael Cassidy was in the star of as well. And it was like, fucking, it was so cool. It like took place in like the Ukraine, and it was like this immersive thing where the audience is just sort of standing on stage the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And you're like walking through this space while the play is happening around you. And I was like, fuck, this is cool.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I wish people did. There's less of an appetite for that kind of stuff in it LA, is, unfortunately.
It's unfortunate.
But I think every time I see it, I'm like, man, I should this do would be something so cool, like that. Man. That'd be tight. Yeah.
It is such a rewarding thing to actually throw yourself into a production.
Yeah.
And not like a sketch.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I love my LA brethren, but. And that's something that took me a while to get used to was, for lack of a better word, the laziness behind putting up a sketch show.
Boy, you're telling me.
Here in L.A., where, you know, I'm off book by second rehearsal and some people are all, like, still need line by tech.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something you do in professional theater.
Right.
And so instead of it affecting me, I was just like, all right, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Like, trust that it'll come together.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the pro I can take away from it. But it is something about throwing yourself into a production, throwing yourself into a character, on stage at least, and just in general. That is such a rewarding thing. So I want to do that.
Yeah.
Then I got this podcast, Culture Kings. Most people probably, not most people, but me, Carl, and Edgar were host of Against the Grain first. And we got drafted. We got picked up by How Stuff Works, changed the name to Culture Kings, brand new podcast. So, like, I guess I'm a podcaster now.
You are. Welcome to the podcast world.
Yeah, I know. Like, we were doing it for a while, but it was on the indie network and just kind of, like, for fun. And now it's like, oh, no, like, you're doing this as a job.
Got to do ad reads and shit like that.
Yeah. And meeting with sponsors and all this crap is insane.
It's such a world. It's like
it is.
It is this medium that is so specific. There's a very specific kind of person that listens to it and likes to consume that kind of comedy. Like,
yeah, it's kind of insane.
Yeah.
I always will consider myself an actor, but there is value in being more.
Yeah.
Especially in today's like world.
Totally.
I think you do yourself an injustice if you don't try to learn other aspects of the business, whether it be production. Like I did, I had a web series for a year, produced it, so that helped me learn the other side of the business.
Yeah.
But I want to start getting a little bit more into writing.
Mm-hmm.
Just for my own self, with no end goal per se, but
it'll make you a better actor.
Yeah.
If you could act on any show tomorrow, which one would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Thank you. This is my podcast.
Something I don't think of that often because I've always been like, oh, just give me a script. I love the sitcom. I wish the sitcom was more of a thing than it is today. It's kind of gone away, in my opinion.
Do you mean, explain that.
I would love to, and this is probably my theater brain too, but I would love to do a show in front of a live studio audience.
So multicam.
Like a multicam sitcom. Yeah. But that's probably not the show I would see myself on tomorrow. Probably.
Man, we could get you on Superior Donuts tomorrow, dude.
Like, yeah.
If you want it, you can do it.
I mean, I was actually an understudy for that in Chicago.
There you go.
The Tracy Letts one. So that would be great. probably like as cliche as this is, I would love to be on Atlanta.
Sure.
I think that would be...
It's a fucking sweet show.
I think that would be fucking sweet.
Yeah.
And even though it's ending, I would love to do a show like A New Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think it would be fun.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, is there, when you see TV, are you like, does your sort of improv brain make you watch TV in a different way?
Not at all.
It's the same experience that it was for you 10 years ago that it is today?
Yeah, I grew up on TV. Maybe for a little bit, like when I first started taking like 101 and 201, I would start recognizing like, oh man, yeah, that's the game.
Right.
Oh, they're hitting that game. Probably because my brain was trying to consume and understand it.
Yeah.
But it very quickly went back to me just watching shows as a pure audience member to love it. So I try not to analyze shows from an improv standpoint.
Yeah.
Because it I don't know. For me, it takes me out of the experience of enjoying
totally.
The television show
yeah.
or movie or anything like that.
It's funny. I just got done writing on this show, and it was my first writing job, and I was shocked at how much of the conversation that happens in the room is literally verbatim, what is the game of this scene?
Yeah.
Like, that is said to a degree that I was shocked by, because you're like, not all these people are, there was one other UCB person in the room, like,
yeah.
but it's, and I think it's like that verbiage or that terminology is like specific to improv in UCB, but for comedy at large, that's a conversation that's been
had
forever. And literally yeah. you're like, what is the comedy game that we are playing in this scene? And so it was so useful as a first time yeah. writer to be like, I can tell you the game of every fucking scene ever.
Cause like, exactly.
I can
imagine it's really great as a writer. And like I said, when I started doing improv, I did start recognizing it.
Yeah.
So it is something that I recognize now. I just try not to analyze it from that standpoint. Like,
yeah,
I don't know, man. The game was kind of weak in that show. Like,
totally.
Not saying that that's how people watch TV.
No, yeah.
But, or improvisers watch TV. But, yeah, it's something that I now realize as something that's just a part of the comedy world and not
yeah.
so much the improv world.
Yeah. That's worse. I think it's gotten worse for me to watch with that sort of like analytical view, more on the acting and writing side. Not mm-hmm. so much. I mean, improv, I guess they're all sort of woven together, but I'll be like, oh God, that guy, this show would be better if that dude was a better actor.
Yeah,
or this,
yeah.
like, God, the writing was a mess and that, whatever.
Yeah.
But it is, it's like a tough thing between you are a consumer, but you're also a producer. And in order to be a producer, you have to have a sort of like academic radar for the quality
for
control meter, you
yeah.
know, and like, yeah, and part of that is just is consuming shit in that way as
in
well.
In that way,
that
yeah.
makes you better.
I think subconsciously, like, I just stopped watching shows now.
Yeah.
Like, instead of asking myself why, like, if somebody says, "Oh, well, why did you stop watching it?"
Yeah,
I could probably give
right.
an answer that
just like it didn't hold me anymore.
Yeah, but yeah, for the most part, it's just like yeah, just
totally.
It didn't hold me.
I still like my roommate is one of those people who he doesn't like anything, and
mm-hmm.
he has like going to the movies with him is a chore. Because
yeah.
he'd be like, oh God, that fuck. He like hated Wonder Woman. I'm like, motherfucker, Wonder
Stop.
Woman was great.
Stop.
It was great.
It was
so
good.
Fun. What are you talking about?
Movie.
Like his barometer is so high, and then I think I'm going to see Star Wars with him. This
yeah.
is. And I'm worried.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, oh,
sit, like,
I'm going to love it and
right.
you're going to fucking hate it. I already know.
Go with like four people and
yeah.
you guys sit on the ends.
Like, let me take a lift home
right.
so that we don't have to talk about this afterwards.
That's how my mom is, man. I love my mom to death, but I hate watching stuff with her. I watched Get Out
yeah.
with her. I watched Get Out again and it was her first time watching it. And you know the part where Laurel is talking to, I forget her name, Pam from Single, Lemon Single, the cop, about like what he
sure,
thought was
sure,
happening.
Sure.
And like he was talking about it, and then she went to go get the people, and she's just watching. And then like right before they cut back to them, she was like, they gonna all start laughing. And then they all started laughing. She's
yeah.
like, I knew it. I was just like, just watch the damn movie,
yeah.
man. Like, stop trying to predict what's going to happen
yep.
next with your mind.
Yep.
Like, just watch it and enjoy it.
That's real.
Yeah.
That's super funny.
Yeah.
Dope. Where can we find you on the internet?
Pretty easy. Instagram and Twitter are both at Jacquis Neal, JACQUIS. NEAL for
Dope.
Those of you who can't spell my name, which is most people,
which is everyone.
That's the easy way to find me, and yeah, look out for Culture Kings. You can Culture Kings Pod on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. That'd be an easy way to find me as well. And catch me on these streets in Harold Night.
Yep, catch him in these streets, y'all.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being the guest today.
Yeah, bro, thank you.
No problem. Again, I am Zeke Nicholson. You can kind of, I didn't plug this on my last one, so DJ Ziggy Zeke on Instagram and Twitter. It's like DJ Jazzy Jeff, only not. great, and that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Jacquis actually will be your host. What
yeah.
a world. Dope. All right. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.